Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Today we're checking in with Dr. Brian Mensch, president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. We'll talk about data centers in Utah, as well as air pollution, nuclear power, inland ports, the Great Salt Lake, compensation for victims of radiation exposure, and other issues. Dr. Brian Mensch is, in addition to being president of Utah Physicians for Healthy Environment, former adjunct faculty member with University of Utah Honors College, teaching the public health consequences of environmental degradation. He practiced anesthesiology in Utah for more than 40 years, now retired, author of two books on our degraded environment, Death by Corporation, The Killing of Humankind in the Age of Monster Corporations, and The Great Brain Robbery, Why Women Have Become Smarter Than Men, Science with an Attitude. He's also a contributor to Utah News Dispatch. Dr. Mensch, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's begin with Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. A lot of people be aware of the organization. Those who aren't, what is it?
Well, in 2026, Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment is one of the largest civic organizations of healthcare professionals in the Western United States. We started our group in 2007, and the impetus for that was about a six-week-long stretch of one of our notorious Wasatch Front winter inversions. I was very distressed, as people were throughout the Salt Lake Valley and up and down the Wasatch Front, at this relentless air pollution problem, and nobody seemed to be talking about it in terms of what kind of a health hazard it was. So I started talking to some of my colleagues who held kind of a similar anxiety about it, and yet we all kind of acknowledged that we didn't really know that much about it ourselves. So we formed a small ad hoc study group and decided we'd better learn about it. And then we reconvened about 2 months later, and we're really shocked at what the medical research showed about how harmful air pollution was. And we actually decided we needed to call the governor of the state of Utah, who was John Huntsman at the time, and let him know what the medical research shows. He agreed to meet with us for 25 minutes, and he ended up spending an hour and a half with us with our presentation about, you know, a summary of what the medical research shows about how harmful air pollution is. And ever since then, we've been growing steadily. We now have about 3,000 members of the lay public and about 450 physicians. So our mission is to advocate and educate, and in some cases litigate, on behalf of the public interest regarding air pollution control. And that overlaps things like the climate crisis, exposure to all kinds of toxic environmental chemicals. Any sort of environmental exposure that affects your health, we're very interested in. So that takes us now to all the kinds of issues that you mentioned briefly at the very beginning regarding the Great Salt Lake, regarding the construction of inland ports, regarding AI data centers, regarding chemical exposure, and so forth. So we have strong opinions about all of those things, but they're based on the medical research. That's the main thing that perhaps differentiates us from many other environmental groups. That's our lane, if you will, and we intend to stay in that lane and try and bring the voice of science to the overall medical community and our politicians so that we can improve the environment that we all depend on for a healthy lifestyle.
Let's start with data centers. Much in the news, we've been talking about it here on this program as well. Hyperscale center planned for Box Elder County. Some, I think, 48 data centers already in operation or planned in Utah. Utah's becoming a real destination, encouraged by state leaders to be so. We'll get into some specifics, but what are your top-level concerns about data centers in general?
Well, data centers are epicenters of various types of pollution. And everyone who lives along the Wasatch Front, I think, is aware of the fact we already have a serious pollution problem. We are in violation of some of the EPA's National Ambient Air Quality Standards, but let me speak to what those standards do and do not do. Those standards are to some degrees expressions of science, but they're also heavily influenced by politics. And that's regardless of whether or not there's a Democrat or Republican in the Oval Office. The EPA, ever since the Clean Air Act in 1970, has tried to, I guess in their mind, balance what they think is protective of public health with what demands industry and various manufacturers might have in terms of emitting pollution. So those standards are always a mix of what the science says, but what kind of political pressure the EPA experiences. Those standards almost always lag behind the science, and frequently for as long as 5 to 10 years, like I say, regardless of the politics. And so those standards themselves are badly out of date. They always are, but sometimes they're even worse than usual, and that's the kind of experience that we're having now. So those standards provides more protection than no standards at all, but they're not really reflective of what the medical science tells us. So let's take data centers and this public dialogue about whether or not data centers are going to harm our health. You have heard dialogue or comments made by people like Kevin O'Leary and some of our state leaders that we should be assured that these data centers will not cause a violation of our ambient air quality standards. Well, that's disputable in and of itself, but those standards need to be understood for what they really are, and that is their compromises with industry over what kind of air quality we're all going to experience. For example, the gas turbines related to these data centers put out tremendous amounts of nitrogen oxides. Nitrogen oxides are a triple whammy public health threat in that they're toxic in and of themselves, but they're also precursors of volatile organic compounds, along with volatile organic compounds, they are precursors of ozone, as well as precursors of PM2.5. So they're toxic for three different reasons. And yet these data centers that are using gas turbines to create electricity are significant emitters of nitrogen oxides. Well, those nitrogen oxide standards, in some cases, have not been upgraded since 1971. And in other cases, not upgraded since the early 2000s. So nitrogen oxides are a serious issue for everyone who lives along the Wasatch Front, and these are going to exacerbate multiple different types of air pollution because of that. So if you think that all the medical research that we really needed to establish the health hazard of air pollution, if you think we haven't made any progress since 1971, then I guess you're fine. But there have been about 70,000 medical studies published in just the last few decades that clearly send us this strong message. There's no safe level of air pollution exposure, none, zero. Smoking one cigarette a day is virtually half as much risk as smoking an entire pack of cigarettes. That same sort of hyperbolic relationship is also true of community air pollution. In fact, we can measure an increase in the the inflammatory chemicals in a person's blood if they are sitting next to a person who smokes one cigarette a day. In other words, one cigarette a day of secondhand smoke, we can measure the impact of inflammatory chemicals in your blood. And inflammation is the common denominator for most adult chronic diseases of the heart, the lungs, of cancer, of diabetes, even of things like arthritis. So small increments in air pollution are going to have big impacts on the public health of people along the Wasatch Front. And yet I don't think the increase in the air pollution from all these data centers could be categorized as small, even if it meets the EPA standards, and even if they get air quality permits from the DAQ.
So you mentioned Wasatch Front. Of course, air pollution possibly degraded right at the site, right? But for example, the big data centers planned for Millard County, people might say, well, that's way out in the West Desert. Affect those people, but what about Wasatch Front?
Well, eventually that sort of pollution will make its way to the Wasatch Front. Some of it will be dissipated for sure. But when you have what we are now seeing are in various stages of the approval process, virtually two dozen data centers planned for the entire state of Utah. The Kevin O'Leary Stratus project in Box Elder County is certainly the biggest, but it's just really the tip of the iceberg. So if you're going to surround the state, and especially the northern part of the state and the Great Salt Lake with data centers, then you're really going to increase the overall pollution burden of the entire state, but particularly along the Wasatch Front. And I think at some point, in addition to that, we need to start looking at also the impact on greenhouse gases, the carbon emissions.
There seemed to be good news come out fairly recently, right? The Wasatch Front was taken off the non-attainment list. You're saying those standards are outdated?
That is some good news. However, if there's ever been an EPA that's playing politics with the science and the standards, it's the Trump EPA. And that's certainly what they're doing. They have in the first couple of months, they tried to roll back a total of 31 different clean air regulations with Lee Zeldin, who is a former oil lobbyist. He has basically turned the mission of the EPA upside down. And my nickname for it is it's the Polluters Protection Agency now, not the Environmental Protection Agency. And they're almost overtly proud of that. So, for example, one of the things they're doing that, or they intend to do, that will affect data centers is this rule change of, I forgot the exact number of it, but let's say you want to bring to a community a significant source of air pollution. Let's say a data center, let's say a power plant. Well, you have to get a permit from the relevant state agency that will do modeling to determine whether or not the emissions of that power plant or that data center are going to cause an increase or violation in the National Ambient Air Quality Standards. And if you can demonstrate that through modeling that will not cause a violation, then you're almost certain to get your air quality permit. But you can't start construction of that facility in any way, shape, or form until you have that permit. Well, the EPA wants to change that rule so that you could build every part of that facility except for the polluting part without an air quality permit and then go to the state for your air quality permit after you've built 90% of the facility. So what are the chances of a community or a state agency unapproving something that's almost entirely built? That's just an absurdity. So the EPA is holding a hearing on that rule change this Thursday, and we've asked people throughout the state of Utah to sign up to testify at that hearing, because it's flipping the mission of the EPA on its head. It's allowing the accelerated development of AI data centers in particular. We think that's the main impetus for it. And so everyone in the state of Utah needs to be aware that not only are you right to be concerned about the air pollution, the greenhouse gases, the water consumption of these data centers, but the EPA is trying to make it so that the normal permitting process has basically been dismantled by this EPA. Now, if you combine with that a law that was passed by the legislature last year, Utah's legislature, I don't mean last year, I mean this last session, which prohibits the state from making any rules tighter than the National Ambient Air Quality Standards or any other rules of the EPA. So the state of Utah is now prohibited from doing anything stricter than the EPA. You combine that with the EPA's attempting to make this rule change, and it's just basically totally dismantled the state's ability to control these things. And yet, last week, Governor Cox stood next to Lee Zeldin, the EPA administrator, and said, oh, these data centers aren't going to be granted any shortcuts. They'll have to get all their permits. And yet, right next to him is Lee Zeldin, whose EPA is holding a hearing next week to try and undercut all of those air quality permits.
Hmm. Tell me about water concerns. Do you have water concerns about the data centers?
Oh, absolutely. It's interesting that we get a lot of comments from people that are proponents of the data centers that say, oh, it'll be a closed loop cooling system. Therefore, it won't use much water. Well, if you listen to Kevin O'Leary in his interview with Tucker Carlson about 2 weeks ago, he admitted that he doesn't know what kind of a cooling system his data center would use because he doesn't have tenants yet. So those promises of a closed loop system are basically nothing more than some sort of attempt to try and assuage the public's concern about water. They're not backed up by any sort of contract. They're not even backed up by any commitment on the part of Kevin O'Leary to using that kind of system. That's the first comment. The second comment is those closed loop systems aren't necessarily some sort of divine answer to our water concerns with regard to these things, because those systems have to be flushed on a regular basis. The water that might be extracted from that aquifer is contaminated with all kinds of brine. And anytime you have any sort of cooling system in these data centers, they are heavily contaminated with PFAS chemicals. Now, if that acronym doesn't mean much to you, the common name is forever chemicals, and you've probably heard that. They are the most toxic industrial chemicals ever produced. So toxic, in fact, that the EPA made this declaration back in 2023. The drinking water standard for Americans should be no more than one drop of PFAS chemicals in a lake the size of six Rose Bowls for one category. For the other category, the standard should be no more than one drop of these chemicals in a lake the size of 30 Rose Bowls. So essentially, there's no safe level of exposure, and yet PFAS chemicals are used throughout all of the equipment of these data centers, including the cooling systems. So you're basically poisoning the water that you say you can keep circulating indefinitely, except for the fact you have to flush the system very frequently. So any discussion about cooling and water consumption needs to take into account all of these factors, not just the total amount of water consumed. And there are two different limbs to the water consumption issue. One is what water consumption is required to produce the electricity, and what is required to cool these data centers. Those are two different things.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about anything else you want to talk about data centers, and then I want to move to nuclear power next. Sure. And other issues we'll talk about. We're talking with Dr. Brian Mensch. He is president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. We'll have more following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We are talking with Dr. Brian Mensch, president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. We're talking about several issues. Talked earlier in the program about data centers in Utah. We'll get into talking about nuclear power next, also air pollution in general, inland ports, Great Salt Lake, and compensation for victims of radiation exposure. Other issues may come up in this hour as well. So, Dr. Mensch, Governor Cox made some interesting comments, I think this was last week, about the specifically the hyperscale data center in Box Elder County. Kevin O'Leary has said that this will be powered by natural gas. Governor Cox says he feels only the first phase. He says I think the word he used was should. They should move to other sources of power as this scales up. And he mentioned nuclear power. And of course, state leaders have been big on nuclear power. This is a way to solve the energy crisis. And they're touting this as a good source of renewable energy. Give me the negative case for nuclear power, and specifically small modular nuclear reactors, which are being touted as the new solution.
Yeah, SMRs, or as you put it, small modular reactors, are the shiny new object from the nuclear industry. They aren't really new. They've been trotted out on and off for about the last 17 years. So this is not a new idea, but the impetus for this, let's call it a love affair between our state leaders and nuclear power all of a sudden, is obviously the attempt to try and provide power for all these data centers. If it wasn't for this data center surge, I don't think there'd be any interest in nuclear power. But Utah, more than any other state, should be very sensitive to the idea that exposing our population to more ionizing radiation should be off the table. I mean, no state has suffered like Utah residents from the Nevada nuclear testing era of the 1950s and 60s. We know that tens of thousands of Utahns, maybe even hundreds of thousands, were victims of the exposure to that radiation. We've had about 50,000 people who have applied for RECA benefits because of cancers that we know are connected to that exposure. But that may be just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the people that were harmed. And it's important for people to understand it isn't just cancer that is a poor health outcome from exposure to radiation. So if there's any state that should be refusing to expose their population to more environmental radiation, it should be Utah's. So what does nuclear power do? Every phase of the nuclear fuel cycle, from the mining of uranium to the eventual decommissioning of a nuclear plant, which doesn't get anywhere near the attention that it should, but everything along that journey, from the mining of the uranium to the eventual closure of that plant, exposes or releases radiation into the environment. There's no safe level of exposure to ionizing radiation. That's a statement made by the National Academy of Sciences that's virtually 20 years old. Well, that has all kinds of implications for people in the medical community and for people who are patients of the medical community, which is virtually all of us at some time. That means that things that expose you to radiation for medical diagnostic purposes need to be understood as having a small risk. If you break your arm and you need an X-ray, you should get the X-ray. But at the same time, everyone involved needs to know that even a small exposure to a single X-ray can have some health consequences. In most people, almost all people, the risks of that one X-ray are not such that you shouldn't get it. Of course you should. But at the same time, people need to understand that's an expression of the fact that there is no safe level of radiation exposure. That's not my declaration. That's the National Academy of Sciences. So the health consequences of exposure to radiation are cumulative. Every little bit of damage builds upon previous damage. So, for example, by the time you have 4 to 5 CAT scans in your lifetime for various reasons, kidney stone evaluation, headaches, or whatever it is, now you're talking about a fairly serious amount of radiation exposure. Everyone needs to know that. The average person is now exposed to about 7 times more radiation from medical procedures than they were about 30 years ago. So it has implications there, but it has implications for this love affair with nuclear power in that every phase of the nuclear fuel cycle emits more radiation into the environment, and we're all subjected to that. So what that translates into are things like this. Studies of the populations who live around nuclear power plants throughout the world see significant increases in rates of cancer amongst populations that live within a few miles of these nuclear power plants. That's because nuclear power plants, when they're operating normally, no explosions, no untoward events, just normal operations, they emit radiation into the general environment. And when you're exposing literally billions of people throughout the earth to a little bit more radiation, you're going to create millions of victims. So what really frustrates me about this new love affair with nuclear power, it completely dismisses the science of there's no safe level of radiation exposure, and yet the nuclear power fuel cycle exposes everyone to a little bit more radiation almost regardless of where you live, and some people significantly more. You know, it really ought to matter all the damage that was done to the people who lived in the Four Corners area from the uranium mining of decades ago. Where are we going to get uranium to feed this nuclear renaissance? Are we going to get it from that same community that suffered tremendously from the decades of the 60s and 70s and so forth of mining uranium? Or now the foreign countries, many of them in Africa, whose uranium mines would feed this sort of nuclear renaissance? The health of those people ought to matter as well. And we're just completely dismissing that. The radon that is emitted from the nuclear, from the uranium mill tail pile in southern Utah have been tracked as far as the East Coast. Radon is extremely radioactive, likely causing maybe as much as a fifth to a fourth of the lung cancer here in the state of Utah. Everyone should be aware of the potential for their basement to be contaminated with radon, and they should get their basement tested for radon. Well, radon is emitted from all these uranium mill tailings, and it's because it's heavier than air, it goes everywhere. Scientists way back in the 1970s speculated that there may be millions of cases of cancer from just the radon emitted from these mill tailings. We're just completely ignoring that part of the discussion.
Water consumption's also of, you know, some of these reactors consume quite a bit of water. I was just reading something on your site that said that water consumption per kilowatt of electricity is about the same in the SMR as a regular large nuclear reactor.
These SMRs have to be cooled just like any other nuclear power plant. So where is that water going to come from? And in fact, if people think that these small modular reactors are going to be any safer or they're going to require any less water, there's no evidence for that. They all have to be cooled. Now, some people will say, well, we'll cool them with sodium. Well, there are some real problems with cooling and using sodium instead of water. Sodium is highly inflammatory, can explode. So it's definitely an increase in risk from that standpoint. But in most cases, the average nuclear power plant is consuming more water per unit of electricity, or at least about as much per unit of electricity produced as a coal-fired power plant. And that's a lot of water. Anytime you have some sort of thermal combustion as your source of electricity, you're going to need to cool it somehow. And water, of course, is the most readily available source of some sort of cooling medium. So that's why nuclear power plants throughout the country and throughout the world are usually sited near sources of water. In a desert, what are our sources of water? In a state where we're suffering from a relentless drought, much of it related to the climate crisis, how are we possibly going to keep providing water to things like this that aren't even built yet? It doesn't make sense from the standpoint of water consumption either.
If you just joined us, we're talking with Dr. Brian Mensch. He's president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. I'd like to move next, Dr. Mensch, to the Great Salt Lake. Your organization is suing the state of Utah to save the Great Salt Lake. We'll have you talk about that a little bit as we go along. But before we get into some of the ins and outs here, what's your biggest concern if the Great Salt Lake were to dry up or even partially dry up?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. We looked at media reports about the hazards of the Great Salt Lake dust around 2022, 2023, and most of them mentioned things like heavy metals and arsenic in particular. But from what we knew about it, we thought that's really not telling people the whole story. So we spent 18 months digging into all the medical research that was relevant to this situation and compiled the information from about 500 medical studies and produced about a 100-page report on the various dimensions of toxicity that are either confirmed to be in that dust or likely to be in that dust. And essentially, it's much worse than what we've been told for a number of reasons. Let's take heavy metals, for example. Virtually every kind of heavy metal that we know of, and most of them are toxic, is in that dust. There are multiple sources. There's 120 years of industrial operation around Kennecott mining operation in the Ochre Mountains. There's heavy metals that are part of the emissions of MagCorp, which operated for about 50 years, but finally shut down. A lot of heavy metals related to that are still there. And then there are 28 sewage treatment plants that discharge into the Great Salt Lake or its tributaries. So every sort of toxin that is a byproduct of modern civilization is in that lake by virtue of just all that waste treatment water being discharged into it, and that includes heavy metals. But that also includes a lot of other things, like microplastics or plastic nanoparticles. We haven't studied that much yet, but we do have reason to assume that microplastics are in that sewage discharge, as they are everywhere else. And a professor from the Utah State University actually measured microplastics in Farmington Bay dust and found that they were extraordinarily high, and that's exactly what we would expect. Well, we're very early on in the medical research on the toxicity of being exposed to plastic nanoparticles, but it's very concerning. For example, and this is just one of many examples, researchers found that if they analyzed the atherosclerotic plaques that were taken out of people's necks during surgery to try and help people prevent strokes, if those plaques were embedded with plastic nanoparticles, the people where those, and that was about 60% of the patients studied in this particular study, those patients had about a 4 to 5 times higher rate of strokes, heart attacks, and sudden death in the ensuing 3 years, as opposed to patients who had those same kind of plaques, but they weren't contaminated with these plastic nanoparticles. Now, that's just one example. You may have heard, as a lot of people did, because it got a lot of media attention, a study that estimated that the average person has plastic nanoparticles embedded in their brain in the amount that would basically be equivalent to a plastic spoon. From these little tiny nanoparticles that are so small you couldn't possibly see them with the naked eye. Well, that means just about all of us have our critical organs, including our brain, contaminated with plastic nanoparticles. Well, now we know that there's early evidence to associate the presence of these particles with things like neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's. We know these plastic nanoparticles can transfer through the placenta, from the placenta across the umbilical cord to a developing fetus. So imagine how uncomfortable it is to have to admit that newborn children are born with contamination of their critical organs with plastic nanoparticles. Now, Great Salt Lake dust is not the only source of that by any means, but it's certainly one of them. So that's just an example of entirely new dimensions of toxic potential from that dust that have not even entered into the public dialogue.
So Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment is saying that efforts so far from the legislature are ineffective. One example, I'm reading from your site, Utah's legislative auditor general found Utah's cornerstone solution to addressing the crisis, the Agricultural Water Optimization Program, may not have set a single drop to the lake. There's one example that you cite.
Yeah, there's no evidence that can confirm that, in fact, that Agricultural Optimization Program has actually delivered any water to the lake. They're really not tracking it. It should be pointed out that a bill that was passed by the legislature this last session, and it's obviously getting a lot of play now that we're talking about data centers and getting water to the lake, they passed a bill that prohibited the state water engineer from considering environmental issues or the common good when determining whether or not a protest of a water right could be considered. Well, that's exactly what we're talking about here with the water rights that are being scooped up for this Kevin O'Leary Stratus data center. They're scooping up water rights, and there are thousands of people who have protested those water rights, but the state law passed just this last session prohibits the state engineer from considering the impact on the general welfare or environmental protection when determining whether or not a water rights protest can be entertained. I mean, it's just a complete capitulation to this movement to try and allow data centers to siphon more water from the Great Salt Lake ecosystem. And while this data center isn't right on the shores of the Great Salt Lake, the water that it would consume comes from that general ecosystem, the aquifer that's connected to the lake. So, anticipating that the state would do things like this and seeing a track record of several years prior of the state not taking saving the lake seriously, that's what prompted our group and four other environmental groups to file a lawsuit to force the state's hand to actually start delivering water to the lake. Now, there are various ways to do that, but we all know that agriculture is the biggest consumer of water that could otherwise go to the lake. Nobody disputes that. Now, it's a difficult decision to say, well, we really can't save the lake without buying out a lot of agricultural water rights. Well, that's probably true. But agricultural is responsible for about 0.5% of the overall gross economic product of the state of Utah. And yet, if we let the lake really dry up, then the consequences are going to be not just a disaster for public health, but an economic disaster as well. The two go together. If the Wasatch Front is essentially unlivable because the Great Salt Lake has dried up into a toxic dust bowl, then what do you think that's going to do to the economy? It'll be devastating to the economy as well.
Let's take another break. We're talking with Dr. Brian Mensch. He is president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. We're covering several issues here. Following break, I'd like to talk about port authorities. We've been inland ports that have been proliferating. Dr. Mensch says there are problems, environmental problems with those ports. We'll talk about that and other issues following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking with Dr. Brian Mensch, president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. We've talked about nuclear power and air pollution, the Great Salt Lake, and data centers. I want to go next to ports, inland ports. We've been talking about this on this program, other programs here at Utah Public Radio as we go along. It seems weird. We don't really have a port as you would think about it here in Utah, but legislature set up the Utah Inland Port Authority, and inland ports have been proliferating around Utah. What are the problems that you see with those ports?
Well, I think the easiest way to think about it is to try and reflect a little bit on a similar sort of quasi-state agency that has gotten a lot of attention recently with this data center controversy, and that's MIDA, which stands for Military Installation Development Authority. Everyone recognizes, I think, who has been exposed to this issue at all, that MIDA is a very powerful quasi-state agency that essentially approved this proposal for the data center in Box Elder County in a way that is really very anti-democratic. They have complete authority over land use. Once a county concedes their authority, then an agency like MIDA has complete authority over how that land is going to be used, and then taxing authority as well. And so the increment in the land value or the real estate value from this sort of development, most of that will go to MIDA. And that's really controversial because a county like Box Elder County in this case is going to be saddled with an awful lot of expenses that they're not going to have enough money really to cover. Expenses or a revenue stream that'll make it more difficult for them to provide infrastructure, first responders, school construction, and so forth. So they're controversial for that reason. They're basically a taxpayer subsidy of real estate speculators and developers. Well, this is the same sort of setup for the Utah Inland Port Authority without the military connection. This was the result of a bill passed in 2018, and it establishes this very powerful quasi-state agency staffed by appointments by the governor and the legislature. But the members are actually removed from any sort of accountability because they sit on this board where essentially decisions can't be challenged. So what they did over the next couple of years after the Utah Inland Port Authority was established in 2018 is they changed their strategy from a massive logistics center to be built in Salt Lake City to a network of smaller, quote, development projects throughout the state. So now they have some sort of new development project that they're involved with. I think they're now up to like 18 or so. But a lot of them still are sited in northern Utah and many around the Great Salt Lake. Well, what they amount to is taxpayer subsidy for development, industrial development around the Great Salt Lake in this case, that would not happen otherwise. In fact, one of the developers said in a public meeting, if it were not for UEPA, my development project would never happen. Well, his development project is very typical. They involve frequently distribution warehouses, some kinds of manufacturing, but again, are drifting towards data centers, especially AI data centers. So it amounts to public subsidy of the companies that are involved in this kind of industrialization around the state of Utah, in particular sites around the Great Salt Lake, that there is no question will be using water that would otherwise go to the lake and to its wetlands. There are somewhere around 55 to 60,000 acres of wetlands that are at risk for being paved over by asphalt thanks to these industrial projects that are sponsored, that are conceived and sponsored and developed by the Utah Inland Port Authority. Now, you may have heard many years ago that Utah needs to grow smarter. Smart growth is what we pursue. This is the opposite of smart growth. This is heavy industrialization of the state of Utah. And with that comes water consumption, air pollution, greenhouse gases, traffic congestion, tens of thousands of diesel trucks. Once a study of one of these projects, and there are two cited in Tooele County, a study of just one of those two projects estimated that at full build out, this project would add 50,000 vehicles to our roadways at full build out. Well, that's a staggering amount of air pollution, a staggering amount of greenhouse gases, and didn't take into account more train pollution, train diesel locomotive pollution, and more airplane pollution. The pollution from airplanes doesn't get anywhere near enough attention. Studies about airport pollution, like from LAX in Los Angeles, show that it causes a staggering amount of air pollution and the worst kind of air pollution because it's heavy in what's called ultrafines, which are the smallest pollution particles that we measure, and they're the most toxic. So from trains, from planes, from trucks, all this industrial development in northern Utah and throughout the rest of the state is going to add a tremendous amount of pollution, fossil fuel use, greenhouse gases, traffic congestion, and water consumption. And then you can add all these other environmental consequences of data centers like tremendous noise pollution and light pollution. It's exactly the opposite of smart growth and the exact opposite of what the people in the state of Utah really want.
Just have about 30 seconds left in the program. If a person's listening, concerned about any of the issues we've mentioned this hour, what action would you suggest they take?
Well, we need everybody in the state of Utah to start being engaged in what kind of a future should Utah have? What kind of an environment do you want? Do you want more air pollution in exchange for maybe a few of certain kinds of jobs? Do you want the Great Salt Lake to disappear because you want industrialization around the lake? Those kinds of conversations people need to be having with their local elected leaders, with city councils, with county commissioners, with our legislature. And our perspective is, I don't think that's what the people of the state of Utah want. If we're going to pursue economic growth, it should be done as that phrase that was popular several years ago, it should be smart growth. We've completely abandoned the whole idea of smart growth in favor of just massive growth. And in a state whose natural resources are already in peril, that's the opposite of what I think everybody wants.
We've been talking with Dr. Brian Mensch, president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. Dr. Mensch, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah.